Watson, Councillor Cowart, and Councillor Gloria Jacob. Community member Mr. Bill Rambanis, my apologies. I'd like to welcome our auditors, Simon Frannick and Michael Hilbert from Grant Thornton at the end there. Thank you, gentlemen. No apologies. Item 2.3, no leave of absence. Responses to the previous questions on notice, item 3. There are nil questions from the public on the Audit and Finance meeting last meeting. And 3.2, questions from the committee members at Audit and Finance Committee meeting held on the 2nd of December 2013. There were nil. Item 4, public time. Are there any public members that want to raise questions in this meeting? No. Declare public question time closed. 4.2. Important note. This meeting is being recorded on audio tape as an additional record of the meeting and to assist with minute-taking purposes and may be released upon request of third parties. If you do not give permission for recording your participation, please indicate this at the meeting. The public is also reminded that in accordance with section 20.3 of the Town of Port Hedland local law on standing orders, nobody shall use any visual or vocal electronic device or instrument to record the proceedings of any meeting unless that person has been given permission by the presiding member to do so. Item 4.2, public statement time. No public statements. Item 5, questions from the members without notice. Do we have any questions? There's nil. Yes.
None.
Item 6, declaration by members to have given due consideration to all matters contained in the business paper presented before the meeting. Show of hands. There's 2. Item 7, confirmation of minutes of previous meeting. 7.1, confirmation of minutes of Audit and Finance Committee of Council held on Monday, the 2nd of December 2013. That the minutes of the Audit and Finance Committee meeting of the Town of Port Hedland Council held on Monday, the 2nd of December 2013, be confirmed as true and correct record of proceedings.
Clarification, so moved, sir.
Moved. Second. Announcements by item 8, announcements by presiding member.
Just take a vote on that.
Oh.
So you're going to move in a second.
Move in a second.
Yeah. It's all in favour.
5-0. Thank you. Item 8, announcements by presiding member without discussion. 0. Item 9, petitions, deputations. Should we skip that one?
We've listed Michael and Simon.
Sorry, my apologies. Yeah. Presentations and submissions, 9.1. Mr. Michael Hillgrove, partner, and Mr. Simon Frannick, Senior Manager of Audit and Assurance.
Just invite them to make comment on the, on the audit report and processes.
So,
thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Firstly, thank you for the opportunity to come along today and to have an opportunity to discuss our audit for the year ended 2013. In terms of our audit approach, just for the new members of the Council Committee, we presented our audit plan in a meeting back in July, as the way the audit was being conducted, and in that plan identified those areas of audit focus, that particularly being looking at revenue, capital expenditure, grants, and normal expenditure, plus presentation, financial statements, and making sure they comply with local government act and financial accounting standards. Our audit completed, and the matters that we did believe were necessary, the communication committee, contained our documents, which I think is in the council papers. And again, our audit report for the year was an unqualified opinion. So there's no matter that we need to communicate to the qualification, that's also for the financial statements and for compliance with the Local Government Act as it relates to financial statements. There were some matters that we tended to into the reports, which again are documented in our report, and they relate to some matters that were resolved in the course of the audit but included for a matter of this record as notified by the committee. Again, and we'll be commencing our planning for this year's audit shortly, and we start discussions with regards to timing and those matters with the relevant people during the course of the short, so we can start this year audit plan. And I welcome any questions there.
Have you, in regards to this year's planning, have there been any preempted points?
I think, again, obviously, from our discussions before this meeting with the CEO and the CFO, clearly, from it's an imperative, I think, from council, from the staff of the council perspective, that we make sure we sign up our audit opinion much earlier in the piece than what we have this year. And that will evolve. I think we've already started those discussions with the view of us coming up and doing our interim visit well before year end. So again, we can make sure that we're comfortable with the underlying system to do as much financial work before year end, and then with the view of signing off much earlier, maybe if the CFO wants to comment on that. But again, we support those views, and we'll make sure we resource accordingly to achieve those takes.
So if I may, in terms of approaching the 13-14 financial year, discussions that we've had with the auditors are about providing a higher level of service. Obviously, that's going to cost a bit more money, so that we can provide a greater degree of assurance both to the elected members and to our community about the robustness of our financial processes. Without a doubt, we need to do a great deal of work around improving the timeliness of our financial statement preparation, and that will be built on the back of more robust month-end processes and controls, so that year-end doesn't become such a big deal because you're doing all the work progressively throughout the course of the year, so that when the auditors turn up, it's just a matter of course that you're handing over the trial balance and the audit file that you've built up during the course of the year. We've certainly got a long way to go to achieve that, but I'm confident that we will, so that this year's audit is undertaken financial statements prepared much earlier, and then the following year we really should be being audited within 7 to 8 weeks of end of financial year close off, with sign off by the auditors 1 to 2 weeks later, so that we're having this meeting in September, October, not in January.
Just a question in relation to your 4.1. I believe that we are going to ask for the report to remove names, is that right? Or
so we've had that discussion.
I'm assuming that sort of, well, it's not sort of what
certainly. In essence, we actually had originally raised as in two sections, section 4 and in the magic letter points in section 5.1. We inadvertently removed it from 5.1 to an oversight in section 4.1. In essence, all it is just saying at the point in time that we were signing off the financial statements in December, Natalie wasn't a member of the Township of Leven at that point in time. Correct, when we came out to do our field work, she was. And what happens, and I'll just explain it to Mao and Claire, effectively we get a bank confirmation back with a list of the signatories as at 30th of June 2013. It's part of our value add. If we weren't letting management know that they should remove them, there could always be the perceived question down the track, well, why didn't you tell us in the first place? So I'm sure they've taken care of it from a management perspective, so it's just more of a value-added point as opposed to a specific risk.
And I think it's strong to say there's nothing that counts dispersions on the relevant employee. It's just purely a process matter and housekeeping matter more than anything else.
Yeah, I just thought there should be an accompanying statement to highlight that.
Not casting dispersions on the relevant employee at all.
I have a question. Seeing as though we're behind the eight ball with regards to putting together our financial reports, can you foresee us catching up to the 7 to 8 weeks within the end of financial year to have these reports ready?
In terms of the 13-14 statements, no, I don't think that the level of maturity or discipline or end of month controls or education understanding of end of financial year processes are in a position here amongst our finance department to be able to do that in this financial year. Certainly, they will be prepared much earlier than what we've seen in the 12 for the 12-13 statements, but they won't be at that 8-week benchmark. However, moving forward beyond that, over the course of the next 12 months, we absolutely should be able to do that, and we should be completing financial statements and reporting to our community in a very timely manner. So it's my expectation that we should be getting audited about that third week of August and sign off a couple of weeks later. And I guess it's part of my role to ensure that my team are well enough equipped with the right processes and controls in place to be able to deliver on that commitment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No, I have no more questions except in relation to the item.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just ask, be quite keen to see some additions to those value add points. Like, I know that you did say about, you know, highlighting when staff changes and stuff, but do you have, are there like a checklist or options or some more value add points? Because I think that is a, what you've highlighted in that little point is something that's pretty small. Like, in terms of value add points, there must be other improvements, recommendations, efficiencies going forward. Is there opportunities in scope, or can we increase the scope so that we can do that sort of thing?
I think if we look at the history of you know, the first year, I think all over the changing. But again, with the system that's currently going to be introduced, we believe we have great opportunity to provide those value-add points, particularly with a solid interim that will be done before year-end. That will allow us time to delve into the systems and provide those points going back. And even if we look back in terms of, because of last year, I mean, our interim planning actually occurred in July of last year, so again, because we then got caught up in busy season, we didn't have the opportunity, but definitely for next year, that's only when we do our issue.
Yeah, I'd like to see that, because I don't think we've been exploring that as much. We've been in a lot of expertise. Is there a way that we can broaden it so that we can look at organisational risk? Is that something that you have an expertise area?
Maybe if I just refer that back to the direction of the audit.
So through you, Mr. Chair, I was about to call you Madam Mayor, through you, Mr. Chair, we need to be very mindful of ensuring that the auditors maintain their independence in terms of auditing the financial statements and not delving too much into internal control work that could potentially be perceived as compromising on their independence. So I think whilst that's really important work to do, it wouldn't necessarily be the same team that would do our external audit that we would have doing that same sort of work. And indeed, that should be the subject of a separate engagement letter to explore some of those internal organisational processes.
Or could that be done following, given that this upcoming financial year is the final year of the current contract? So can it be an additional scope that can be added into that, or is it still too dangerous?
I think, if you guys wanted to comment on it, I would see that as a separate engagement.
It's a separate engagement.
It'd be good to take advantage of that intel.
Oh, certainly. That would be something good, but again, I think, again, it's proper that the scope of the document outside of again, so that's something we look at. Again, the point in terms of our independence, making sure we're not auditing those.
Oh, I appreciate that. But
we can definitely look at that in terms of that, yeah.
I'd like to explore that opportunity.
If we were to look at heading down an interim audit function, then we should probably explore testing the market on that, because it's not necessarily going to be our external auditors who need to provide that function, and it's outside the scope of our current contract, so we would probably look at going back to the market and seeing who offers those particular services and what's best suited to the town's needs.
So if I can, through the chair, I think there's a couple of steps, and we've had a preliminary discussion today about what we might do additionally over and above the current scope for the 13-14 audit. That may well then feature as part of the scope for the tender that we would need to then go to the market at the closure of this contract and this arrangement. So I think what we're looking to do is, as Claire indicated, try to get even a more robust inspection, if you like, of our processes and our position, so that we can be very, very clear, very, very open to the community, and perhaps, and more transparent, but perhaps even have more of a We speak today about whether there's even you know, the simplified reporting, the simplified financial statement that the community might better understand.
Yep.
So we'll look at all those options. We'll work up the scope and with Grant Thornton and take it from there.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you, gentlemen. Moving on. Go to item 10, reports of officers. Item 10.1, corporate services. 10.1.1, 2012-13, audited financial statements. Claire Fallon, Director of Corporate Services, date report 9th of January 2014. Disclosure of interest by officer is nil. In summary, this report presents the 2012-13 financial statements and the independent auditor's report of the Audit and Finance Committee for recommendation to Council. Background, the town is required to prepare general purpose financial reports each year and refer them to audit as soon as practical, and not later than 30th September following the end of financial year. The town submitted the 2012-13 draft financial statements to the auditors Grant Thornton audit by 30th September, and on the 16th of December 2013 received an unqualified audit report. Financial statements are prepared in accordance with the Australian Accounting Standards, Local Government Act 1995, and the Local Government Financial Regulations 1996. Management's responsibility is to prepare the financial statements in accordance with the Standards, Act and Regulations, and to ensure that the reports present fairly to the financial performance and position of the town, free from material misstatement, whether due to fraud or error. The role of the auditor is to provide an opinion based on their audit as to whether management has fulfilled these obligations. The auditors also prepare a separate, more detailed report for management identifying any issues arising from the conduct of the audit and recommending any corrective actions. The report is provided to management for the inclusion of management comments in response to concerns raised. Council's Audit and Finance Committee has delegated authority to liaise with the author and receive and examine the author's report and any management letters arising from the council from the conduct of the audit. Consultation, Town Auditors, Grant Thornton.
No,
you don't need to read out the item. Questions, comments?
I have points of clarification, please, several relating to some of the comments within and the attached letter to Mr. Wilgrove over there. I noticed your budget indication, we've said that there's a deficit that we're carrying forward of roughly a negative unrestricted cash amount of $624,000. Several questions in relating to that. What does this mean? How will we address this deficit? And how is the efficiency dividends contributing to address that deficit?
Okay. Through you, Mr. Chair. What the negative $624,000 of unrestricted cash means that out of our entire portfolio of cash and investments, we've got restrictions in the form of unspent grants, which can only be utilised for a particular purpose. We also have reserve money, which Council has restricted by way of resolution for particular purposes. Of course, that can be changed by way of resolution and advertising. But we have restricted, effectively, more money than we physically have on hand, leaving us with negative unrestricted cash of $624,000. It is my professional opinion that Council should maintain sufficient levels of unrestricted cash to pay its debts and obligations as and when they fall due. That degree of working capital allows us to pay our bills, particularly during those periods in between peak cash inflows. Negative $624,000 is not an acceptable position to be in. So whilst we certainly have an appropriate level of cash and indeed have quite a lot of cash and investments on hand, we've restricted too much of it, and that's something that we need to revisit. In terms of budget implications moving forward, we need to start to introduce strategies for generating surplus budgets that allow us to build up that unrestricted cash. It's not going to be achievable over a 6 to 12 month period. That is something that we need to be working at over time. That means closely monitoring our levels of operational expenditure and ensuring that every dollar of revenue that is owed to council is collected and converted from a receivable into cash, and that we're being right on top of those sort of processes. In terms of the efficiency dividend playing into that, the way the 13-14 original budget has been built is a carry forward surplus from 12-13 of $3.2 million, an efficiency dividend of $2 million to round it up, and a deficit remaining of $3.2 million, such that they all come out to zero. So as we achieve the efficiency dividend, that actually makes no difference on the bottom line because it was already built into the budget. What we need to achieve is the efficiency dividend plus $3.2 million plus $624,000. And that will get us back into the black in terms of unrestricted cash. So we've got quite some time to go, hence my comment that that is not going to happen over a 6 to 12 month period.
Can I just ask, how does this happen? How is it, I know you've stepped into an absolute fight, but how is that not controlled, that restricted cash?
Through you, Mr. Chair, I think that it is the result of a number of factors. One of those is over the last few years, we've seen a number of major facilities come online. And whilst we've been successful in obtaining a large amount of external funding to construct those facilities, the operations of them, which we're just starting to see the full 12-month cycle of, are probably far beyond estimates that were made in terms of the running costs. And I think at the time those decisions were made, there were some assumptions about the level of growth that would happen and the level of additional revenue that would then be coming into the organisation, and that simply hasn't materialised. So we are living beyond our means. Probably what further exacerbates it is we haven't had a great degree of rigour around our accounting for restricted funds, in particular restricted grants. Mm-hmm. And some of those have been lost in what you would call unrestricted cash. And as we recognise those and pick them up, it's actually getting down to what is a realistic level of restricted cash, an accurate level. So improved accounting processes will certainly see a great deal more attention paid to that unrestricted cash figure with a lot more support around how that number's calculated.
So an unrestricted, what would be a safe unrestricted cash level and manageable?
So typically organisations should be aiming for 15% or 6 weeks of their operating budget. So for an organisation this size, we would comfortably be aiming for $4 to $5 million. And that is not going to happen again over a short period of time. It's going to require a great deal of discipline around our budgeting process, revisiting potentially levels of service and levels of revenue coming into the organisation. So without a doubt, coming into the 14-15 budgeting process is going to be an exceptionally difficult time. I think we've all heard federal government say it over the past few years that these are not going to be generous budgets. Town of Port Hedland simply isn't in a position to be financially sustainable into the future and continue to expand beyond its rate base. We need to move back into living within our means and making sure that in 5 years' time and 10 years' time, we're not having these same discussions where the organisation is vulnerable from year to year in terms of its financial position.
Sorry, through you, Mr. Chair. Just what was that percentage you said of operating?
Through you, Mr. Chair, it's about 15%.
15%.
In reviewing WA local government, perhaps the auditors could comment on that. It does seem that a number of local government entities across the state are falling well short of that benchmark. My experience from New South Wales councils is that is basically a given, that you're expected to maintain an adequate level of working capital. Again, though, a number of local government entities in that framework also fall short of that. But it's certainly something that we should be looking at improving. In terms of how that links into our financial ratios, at an absolute minimum, we should have a current ratio of 1:1. That means $1 of current assets for every dollar of current liabilities that we need to service or repay. We should be aiming for a 2:1 ratio, and that gets us into green light territory. At the moment, we're sitting at about 80 cents to pay, 80 cents in the bank to pay for each dollar of debt that we've got in current liabilities.
So through you, Mr. Chair, just to further question that, do we have any strategies in mind as to how we are going to contend with the 20% deficit and how we sort of work with our asset base and our operational costs? Do we have anything like in our minds, given that we're so close to needing to discuss that already?
Through you, Mr. Chair. You'll have seen that the action taken just before Christmas in terms of trying to reduce our staff numbers, which was one of our biggest spend areas, is part of that strategy. Our focus for this year is on achieving that $2 million efficiency dividend, but as a result of the action taken prior to Christmas, we should put ourselves in a position from 1 July to potentially be making operational savings year in, year out of $2 million. Actions like that help lead us to a more sustainable position. We've certainly got a longer way to go in terms of identifying other areas of expenditure. Another important point to note would be about focusing our dollars on the assets that we already have and making sure that they're at an acceptable level for the community, reinvesting in the things that we already own rather than expanding that asset base and putting greater sustainability pressures on us as an organisation. So in terms of capturing all of those different steps, we're in the process of developing the long-term financial plan. Around that, we need some really supporting policies and strategies, like a clearly defined rating strategy that sets out council's commitment to the community about what sort of rate increases they might be facing, or what our position will be in terms of maintaining a base level of rates that we won't drop down below. So therefore, if we lose a beach haven, then we need to make up that money by distributing across the rest of the community, that sort of plan. Also having a borrowing strategy so that we have clearly defined benchmarks around the level of borrowings that we can adequately service, and making sure that our LTFP is in line with that. And again, a reserves policy as well, so that we can clearly articulate amongst ourselves as part of the Town of Port Hedland organisation, and also to our community, what sort of money we will be setting aside for future purposes, and what those target minimum and maximum balances will be. All of those strategies help inform the long-term financial plan.
Sorry.
Can I just add to that, if I can, through the chair, that I guess our concern has been that we need to make sure we're starting with the right base figures. And a lot of the work that Claire has been doing recently has been ensuring that we actually get the right figures in at the right time. So there's not much point having a long-term financial plan that starts with incorrect figures. It's just going to distort our position into the future. So we're really conscious of getting the right figures in there to start off with. The other key issue we want to look at is the risk. And there are risk factors, and some of those risk factors are things such as our leases, because they have a finite term, and there is no guarantee that revenue source will exist after the end of those leases. So one of the key issues we're looking at, I guess, is what I would call our business as usual approach, and have those extraordinary revenue streams coming in below the line, and then perhaps they are used, and I guess this is a strategy, used particularly for debt reduction. So at least we're actually reducing the debt while we've got the benefit of those additional revenue streams, knowing that perhaps at year 9 or year 7 within the course of a long-term financial plan, when that lease expires, we should not be accounting for any revenue after that point, until such time as we have a legal agreement for another lease to put back into the revenue stream. And I think quite clearly there has been a mixing of the revenue streams into trying to create a budget that is sufficient for the Town of Port Hedland's uses on a year-by-year basis, rather than looking longer term. We're now trying to move to that longer term view to ensure that there is a level of sustainability around this organisation. It's well known there's been the spikes and the troughs in the Town of Port Hedland's financial position probably over the last 20 to 30 years. We want to try to level that out. We will level it out, because that's my obligation, and certainly Claire's obligation, and the executive's commitment is to make that happen.
Cool. Just in relation to that, through you, Mr. Chair, again, just following on from, we're just talking about council's long-term financial plan, and in relation to note 21 from the auditors. Where are we at? I mean, and what can we expect? I know everyone talks about this, that we aren't able to come to that ratio because our long-term financial plan hasn't been adopted. So if we've been talking about this for some time and prior to your coming as well. So if we were to put hard bricks and mortar to it, what sort of timeline are we talking about? Is it achievable? I know you've said it's not achievable by the end of this financial year, but will it be achieved by the end of this financial year?
Through you, Mr. Chair, I'm currently working on it at the moment. I absolutely hope it will be achievable this financial year. Indeed, I would hope that within the next month we will have something to come back to council with. The approach for it at the moment is, much as Mal has said, it's about identifying the leases, the TWA rating money that's coming in, and putting some sort of, you know, expiry dates around those. In terms of moving forward, limited capital works in there beyond renewal on our existing infrastructure networks. So there's no great big new multi-purpose centres or anything like that being built into it. We're trying to get it down to a really realistic level so that we can start to set a decent rate pricing path for our community. Work is happening on that as it stands. Given the state of the draft long-term financial plan, I guess at the point that I've come into the organisation, it includes something like $800 million worth of expenditure over the next few years. That's simply been set aside and we're starting from scratch.
So just to clarify, if I can, the comment about what we'll achieve by the end of this financial year in terms of our financial position, I guess we internally we talk about a financial recovery plan. I'm not sure if that's the language we want to use in the community, but certainly internally we call it a financial recovery plan, and that's getting to that point where we will have that 15% of unrestricted cash. We will have our debt servicing levels down to an appropriate level. We will be spending more on our assets. So we're looking at how we might introduce that strategy, and really it almost sits hand in glove with the long-term financial plan. It's one and the same thing, but it's really going to be evidenced in the assumptions that we put in below that. And that might be, you know, as an example, there might be a restriction of salaries and wages. You only get 4% growth per year, so that includes current staff and any additional staff. Perhaps that's as simple as that. The CEO then works within those realms. Perhaps it's looking at any additional revenue sources are used initially to reduce debt. You know, so we'll look at those assumptions to incorporate into that with discussion, through discussion with the council.
And if I may, in terms of servicing debt, when we take out new loans, we need to be really smart about how we do that. Debt is probably being considered a bit of a dirty word in local government, but it's absolutely a prudent tool in terms of managing our finances. Good debt and bad debt. I would argue that bad debt is drawing down a 20-year loan for $150,000. We will repay that loan so many times over by the time we get to the end of it. However, they're decisions that are already in place, and so long as we start to utilise those particular tools more effectively into the future, all of that stuff contributes to a stronger financial position.
So, might I request that the committee be provided with the top 5 to 10 most costly, whether you call them items or accounts or whatever, and you've mentioned staff, you've mentioned, other bits and pieces. So is it possible that the committee could have a list of the 5 priority expenditures for the town that may be something that we could discuss and review in future committee meetings, just so that we're aware of. Actually, I'd prefer 10 if you could, because that gives us a nice broad mix. But then, you know, they're items that we should be very conscious of as a committee, as to where the majority of our operational dollars are, and as part of your cost recovery plan. I think we should be discussing those things within this committee as part of the agenda as well.
So through the chair, I guess we've been talking again this morning about what level of community engagement we want to have in terms of, I guess, what I've mentioned more recently about the town's financial sustainability. We want to have some workshops with the community over the next 6 to 8 weeks as well. So part of our discussion this morning was exactly that, is looking at not only expenditure but also revenue. But also, I think it's one part of that is actually looking at the trends of those expenditure levels and the rationale behind why those trends have changed. The other important part is to realise that a lot of that expenditure is tied to revenue. So, you know, through the engineering section, there are road grants which are significant revenue streams which are tied to that purpose. External funding through community development is tied for particular purposes. So you just need to be careful looking at expenditure alone. But certainly if you looked at our major operating costs, I think it's quite clear, employment costs, if you aggregated all our utility costs, plant and machinery, insurance,
debt servicing
are probably going to be the top five.
And recreational facilities.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see them as a list in priority, and then we could understand as a committee, but also I think it'd be helpful for the elected members to be made aware of what it is that is costing.
So in saying that...
And what it is that is bringing us to revenue. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Sorry. Through the chair. And I think it's a discussion we want to have a talk about in terms of the chart of accounts at some stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if we could then provide the council and the community, I'll use utilities as an example. If we could provide a format where the community and the council can see the aggregated cost of all utilities costs across our operations, and then you can actually do the trend analysis on that as well, does it really matter to the council whether it's a utility cost associated with this building, the reserve over there, or not? It's actually what our total cost of utilities are, or what our total cost of insurance is, or what our total cost of plant and equipment is. So we look at some of those global positions, because I think that's where we would like the council to be focusing their attention, as distinct from line item 42 in the budget, which talks about $7.50 for postage. So I'm trying to bring it up to that strategic level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, I'm not being mentioned condescending last night a number of times. I'm not trying to be condescending or being critical, but I think that's the view that we need to be looking at.
And through you, Mr. Chair, I think I've made the point before that we bombard the council with pages and pages and pages of detail on a monthly basis in terms of our financial reporting, that it completely distracts the elected members from the bigger picture stuff. So the information that we are providing to you does not enable, it does not support the kind of strategic financial decision making that you are looking for. So,
which I think reflects the comment about getting the big picture on what is X costing this organisation, and you're right. On the flip side is what it is that is bringing revenue, and then I think as elected members we have a better understanding of that, and I do reflect upon the constant at audit and committee levels. It's fine because we should be part of that, but certainly at elected members getting this chunk of report is we pay people like Mr. Hill and his colleague down the end there to do that type of auditing. But if we got the big picture, that's exactly where I would like to see the organisation and elected members be.
So as it currently stands, we are producing utility costs on a monthly basis, but actually not in a format that allows you to really do any trend analysis. And for whatever reason, we're tracking this major expenditure utilities. On the same page, we're tracking expenditure on bottled water.
Mm.
That's not the kind of strategic decision making that will set us on a path to sustainability. So over the coming months, I've discovered there's a policy around the monthly financial reports. I'd like to bring that back to council with probably a more appropriate range of reports that we should be looking at on a monthly basis, and in particular putting greater emphasis on that quarterly reporting, which is very much about our projected year-end results compared to our current position.
Bill, you've got a big say, haven't you?
Got a wheelbarrow full of money in there, too, haven't you, Bill?
Not for negative, unrestricted cash levels.
6 months ago, there were 44,000.
Question, if I may, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, just with the budgeting, obviously going forward, is there a projected, and I might have missed it in the previous comments,
Do we know whether we're going to have a positive or a negative unrestricted cash balance for 2014, A? And B, in terms of obviously with cash flows, etc., I mean, I would expect that they're reviewed monthly, projected versus actual, and we pick up certain levels of where we need to pick up our game, so to speak, and where we've overspent and how we're going to meet that surplus at the end of 2014, just to get a better understanding, I guess, going forward, yes.
Through you, Mr. Chair. With the way our budget currently stands, we are going to have negative unrestricted cash of $3.8 million, assuming there are no balance sheet movements at the end of 2014, and that also assumes that we achieve the $2 million efficiency dividend. We are currently going through the December quarterly budget review process. Out of that, hopefully we achieve the bulk of the efficiency dividend, which then allows any additional savings to be on top of that and help reduce that $3.8 million projected deficit. It's not fantastic news as it currently stands, and part of that is the way that local government builds its budgets, particularly in Western Australia. There's this focus on a projected net surplus of your current assets, and then you build your budget, and hopefully the two cancel each other out. So it doesn't seem the most robust way to be building our budgets, and certainly I would be recommending that we change that focus back down to something as simple as movement in unrestricted cash, because our core focus has to be on having enough money in the bank to pay our bills as and when they fall due.
Have some of these assets, so let's pick the current ratio, have they been, what's the trend there been like the last two or three years? Have they been improving, or has there been a fallback in that in the last couple of years?
Through you, Mr. Chair, the trends have been negative.
Right.
Part of that is around the fact that an enormous amount of capital expenditure has been undertaken, delivering things like the stadium and the JD Hardy Centre upgrade and the Shack upgrades, which are great community facilities, and we're starting to see the full 12-month cycle of those costs.
Sorry, I have a few more questions. Sorry. You're under the microscope here, Claire.
That's okay.
Just in relation to the correspondence that you sent back to Michael, which is attached, you mentioned some item 49. You acknowledged that uncorrected misstatements have been brought to our attention by the auditors. What are these? Because I didn't see any.
Through you, Mr. Chair. This is a fairly standard letter that any client needs to provide to its auditors, and it's basically an assurance from management to the auditors that, to the best of our knowledge, our accounting records are correct and we've disclosed any known instances of fraud. We're making statements about the ongoing viability of the organisation and so forth, so that's very standard audit language, and indeed this letter is prepared by the auditors, sent to us, we put it onto our template and sign off on it. So it needs to cover certain things in terms of accounting standards and auditing standards. Section 49 particularly acknowledges that the auditors may have identified issues that they perhaps don't agree with, and there have been discussions around those, and management can choose to make the audit adjustment to align with the auditor's view, or because of information known to management, can say, well, actually, we acknowledge your position on that. However, we maintain that this is the correct way to go. If you flick over onto page 22, this is the unadjusted audit difference, and it relates to a outstanding debtor with the Headland Senior High School around some disputed electricity charges at the Matt Dam, because, as you'll be aware, both the Matt Dam Cinema and the high school draw off the same power board. My understanding is that the bill has historically been in the town of Port Hedland's name, and we then on charge approximately 70% of the charges to the high school. They are disputing charges going back to 2011-12. I'm not aware that there's been any particular discussions beyond the current electricity charges, which are ongoing with the high school. So we need to revisit this. What this is saying is that the auditors are recommending that we recognise that as a bad debt and just write it off now. Management's position is no, we don't believe that to be the case given the information currently at hand, and we expect that to be collectible.
Can we prioritise
this? Oh, absolutely. And
so just as a side issue, we've had a couple of major Horizon Power accounts to be resolved over the last 12 months. One has been at the airport, and that's we've clarified that issue. We've actually paid that account, and we're now in the process of recovering parts of that account from various users at the airport. This has been the other issue. There's three issues. So this has been the second issue, and community development and infrastructure. I think I've been working with the Department of Education and the Headland Senior High School to correct this or to overcome it. And the third issue is the Pilbara Underground Power Project invoicing and our recovery levels from what we're owed by ratepayers has been lower than what expected. So that has created a need to enter into a payment plan, if you like, or a payment arrangement with Horizon Power. So those three issues that have been resolved, all fairly large figures, but we've resolved the payment of the airport issue. We're now in collection mode. This one, I think, is getting closer to completion.
Yes.
And we have put a proposal to Horizon Power for, a payment plan or payment strategy, which we're waiting to hear back from Horizon Power on in terms of the Pilbara Underground Power Project.
Excuse me. Would the other figures be anywhere in the vicinity of this?
Through you, Mr. Chair. Yes. In terms of power bills, significantly larger. I believe the airport was $1.4 million.
Yep.
The critical element of this one is that this is an uncharged amount that's been sitting on our outstanding receivables list for a couple of years. The auditors quite correctly have said, well, this was here last year and you gave us a good explanation about it, and we've come back 12 months later and it's still sitting there uncollected. So they've absolutely got a good argument about that. Materially, though, it doesn't really change what a user would understand from reading the financial statements, but quite correctly brought up as something that needs management attention. We do have a 90-day debtors listing that's provided to council on a monthly basis, and there are a number of large outstanding receivables that go back quite some time. A lot of those are tied to our landfill operations and also airport. Probably fairly notorious across local government for having a high level of bad debt expenditure. So it really draws management attention to strengthening controls around who we grant credit to and how we respond to anything once it gets to that 30-day overdue mark. So we need to really strengthen our processes there.
Can I ask who the Town of Port Hedland used for the debt collection services?
We have been using Dun & Bradstreet. I believe that has just recently moved over to a company called AMPAC. Most of our debt recovery expenditure should be on-charged to the debtor so that in the event that we collect anything, that hopefully reduces the town's out-of-pocket expenses. However, if we improve our processes at the beginning in terms of who we grant credit to and a lot more proactive in our collection, then in theory we should be getting cash in the door quicker and spending less on recovery, and indeed that's got to be better for our customer relations if we're not sending the sheriff around to seize their goods.
Just a question in relation to your comment just then about on charging costs. That would be written inside of our credit terms and conditions, because if it's not, then you'd have to review your credit application form to ensure that is inside of the terms and conditions, otherwise you can't just slap them with the recovery costs.
Through you, Mr. Chair, that's absolutely correct. I couldn't identify a credit policy, but apparently we have a credit application form that we have people fill out prior to us granting them credit. I'm not quite sure how we're doing that without a publicly available policy in place that does clearly articulate that. Rates is a slightly different issue because it's captured in the fees and charges sundry debtors. We just need to review the entire way, quite frankly, that sundry debtors is operating, and obviously that's part of my role.
Just as a last thing from me, Mr. Chair, just a question around, I guess, a statement that's made inside of the officer's report that says management is keenly focused on ensuring that, the key findings as set out on pages 5 to 6, which is on page 13, and internal control observations on pages 11, and management is keenly ensuring to undertake that these standards and accounting standards and preparedness on site works are done. So how are we doing this? How have you, can you tell us how you're doing this?
Through you, Mr. Chair. I guess if I can be completely blunt, we are having some changes in staff. We parted ways with the previous finance manager prior to Christmas. We are recruiting for a new finance manager and are expecting a fairly high level of skill and performance in that role. It's a critical financial management role. I have recruited a replacement coordinator on the financial management side, and that's Heloise, who is up the back sitting in on her first audit and finance committee. Heloise commenced with us just after the new year and comes from a very strong background preparing ASX financials for three listed companies. Bringing that sort of knowledge and that sort of structure into a team that has experienced a very high degree of turnover over a very short period is starting to show immediate payoffs. We need to do some pretty basic things like reviewing our payroll, creditors, debtors and rates processes so that we're cutting out the busy work and focusing on more appropriate controls so that people have greater capacity to ensure that they're doing the right things in the right way rather than doing busy work and signing things six times. And then making sure that out of those, the numbers that are going into the system, we're actually producing meaningful reports out of it, both for budget managers, for the executive, for the elected members and the community. And at the moment, we're not there, but introducing, I guess, a greater degree of experience and qualifications into that team will make a world of difference.
Thank you, Director. That's all from me, Mr. Chair.
Is there any further questions? Okay. Thank you, Claire. Moving on. Item 11, late items as per the box.
Happy to move that without any further questions.
Recommendation. We have a mover and a seconder.
Yes.
Jacob. Okay. So you'll just ask us any further questions. Any debate?
Any other queries or
no? You put it to the motion.
Okay. Can we get a motion on that?
Vote, sorry.
Two nil. Item 11, late items as permitted by a presiding member or committee, there are nil. Item 12, motions of which previous notice have been given. Nil. Item 13, there are nil confidential items. Item 14, any applications for leave of absence? Yes,
Mr. Chair, yes I do, but I'm not sure that it conflicts with your meeting because there's no meeting date here as yet.
19th of Feb.
Okay, I will be in Melbourne from Friday the 30th to February the 6th. To 6th of February?
The first one.
Friday the 30th of January.
Oh,
I think it's this Friday.
31st,
sorry.
When's the next meeting, sorry?
19th of February.
19th?
Okay. You're okay? That's just Gloria.
Sorry.
To accept that. Yes. So that's the only leave of absence?
Yes. Oh.
No.
Kelly?
No, just...
I'm meeting and seconding? Yep. No problem.
mover. Okay. Seconder was
Bill.
Yep.
Put that to the vote.
And we've got the date next meeting, so 15.
We'll take the vote on that. When you've got a, so when we have a motion to accept those leave of absence, you'll then need to, so you've got your move and your seconder.
Yep.
You then just need to take the vote.
Okay. So can I have a vote on that? That's 5-0. Thank you. 15.1, date of next meeting as discussed. The next Audit Finance Committee meeting will be the 19th of February 2014. 15.2. Sorry?
Same time, same back time.
Same time.
12.
The next meeting will have the December QBR on it.
I'll close the meeting. Declare the meeting closed at 1:10.